You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. Later on, I'll be talking about Michael Jordan's last dance, Jimmy Butler being put on the spot by Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe, and some comments made by Pat Riley. But first, some sad news from the world of football in South Florida. The passing of longtime Miami Dolphins head coach Don Shula at the age of 90. Don Shula, I'm not a football fan anymore. I don't watch the sport as much as I used to. I didn't like watching players bash their heads in knowing that their lives were at risk after my experiences talking to professional athletes in basketball. And so that changed my perspective on football. I played football. I know what it takes. I could tell you that it's personally very dangerous, and sometimes the culture of football is not very good for you. But as a longtime Dolphin fan in South Florida, Don Shula was the coach that I grew up with. He was the premier coach. He was the guy who led the Dolphins to their perfect season that kept the team perennially in the playoff chase. They never really won another title for a long time. They never made it to the Super Bowl during most of Dan Marino's career. But Shula was always a coach that seemed to get the most out of players. And so he was always just came across as a very fatherly / grandfatherly later in his life role model. And he did so much for this community. He did so much for his players. I don't think anybody ever spoke ill of him as a former player or anything like that. He pushed you hard. He was a hard man himself as a coach. But at the same time, he was very, very successful. And it was unfortunate to see his tenure end, although he was replaced by Jimmy Johnson, who at the time was probably the elite coach in the NFL. Either way, he was an impactful coach here in South Florida, probably on the Mount Rushmore of local sports heroes. And Pat Riley actually issued a statement on that, released by the Heat earlier on Monday afternoon. Riley said, "There was no better man or coach in the history of the profession than Coach Don Shula. He was tough, courageous, and an authentic leader with great integrity in his pursuit of perfection, which he achieved. I followed his coaching philosophies with great eagerness since moving to Miami, and my respect for him helped mold me not only as a coach, but also as a man. My heart and prayers go out to his wife, Marianne, and his entire family at this time. May God bless you as you continue to spread your light while teaching in your new locker room. Rest in peace, Coach." So a nice statement from Riley. And I think although Riley's tenure here did not, I think, coincide with Shula's as head coach of the Dolphins, either way, his impact still pretty clear. And I think it's just a tough day for a lot of sports fans around South Florida. So I just thought I'd mention it. But Riley did have some other comments recently that are more germane towards football, and I did want to get into that because there was a statement, well, not necessarily a statement, he posted an interview on Heat.com that touched on a number of subjects, and one of which kind of made national news a little bit, and I'll devote a little time to that. He actually spoke a lot about the end of the season, you know, needing to follow the rules, follow the science was his exact quote. And of course, listening to your local, state, and national governments, not always the best idea considering some of the bad decisions that our own local governments have issued at times. But either way, the basis of the point stands that, we should do whatever we can to try and minimize the spread of COVID-19. So it was good to hear Riley kind of taking a stance there and making that a public statement. He also spoke a little bit about the surprising youth movement of the team that he did not know. And not the rest of the coaching staff or scouts and anybody affiliated with the team, they weren't really sure going into the season how good Duncan Robinson would be, how good Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero and Derrick Jones Jr. would be. That they were very surprised at the success that this team's young core has had. This has not been historically under Riley's watch a team that develops a lot of young talent. It's always kind of by mistake, by accident, where a young player winds up standing out. You have the rare occurrence like Dwayne Wade, where he really stands out from his rookie season. But for the most part, you don't get a lot of players that have shown like that. They're It's a team that has been built around mostly fully developed veterans or guys that are kind of complementary to maybe a more talented younger player. But either way, there hasn't been much. I mean, you think about the success of the draft. I mean, Josh Richardson kind of bloomed there just as Winslow didn't really pan out the way we would have liked, and so on and so forth. It has not been a franchise built around the draft for the most part, with the exception, again, of Dwayne Wade. He also spoke about free agency, and one thing that has kind of been overlooked, even as I continue to get questions from all of you about landing Giannis Antetokounmpo or maybe Victor Oladipo, etc. Riley addressed the fact that this team has a number of free agents themselves that they have to kind of resolve first and foremost. He stipulated they're not quite sure what the salary cap is going to be. They're not sure how they can spend their money and where it'll be. They're going to try to do whatever they can to bring back Myers Leonard and Goran Dragic and Derek Jones and Duncan and everybody else that is near the end of their contracts. We're not sure when the season will begin. He doesn't know. Nobody knows. There's supposed to be some news on that front, but the reality is that it looks like the season will probably end, although a lot of owners are holding out hope that they might be able to resume play and maybe even launch the playoffs at some point this year. That doesn't look very optimistic or realistic, but either way, Riley's statement was a positive one that they're clearly understanding what they need to do. They've also looked ahead for the draft. It's something that I haven't even looked into. I have not given this team a lot of draft coverage because the reality is, one, we're not quite sure what to make of this. So, we missed out on the Final Four. We missed out on the tournament. We missed out on the opportunity to get news from combines and everything else like that. There's no real scouting process right now, and so you have a very limited amount of footage or video or anything to really kind of gauge what players should be taken. And, of course, with Miami being in a very low draft position, it's not like they're drafting a top 10 player. This isn't the same kind of hype that we had last year for Tyler Hero or for other players that would drop around that point in time. It's not a lottery pick. And so it has not been as exciting, and a lot of the overall feeling is that this draft is not a one laden with superstars, but rather deep in role players and things of that sort, which is fine. Nobody that the Heat are going to draft is going to fit in right away as an immediate impact player, considering the kind of talent that they have and the depth that they have already. But one statement did stand out in terms of not just the draft and free agency, but Riley also stipulated that with the core of this team, with the kind of depth that they have, with the acquisition of Andre Iguodala, Solomon Hill, and Jay Crowder at the trade deadline, that he sees this team as being particularly close. In context of free agency, he also said that he believes that they're very close, that he wants to build a contender. The reason why I'm bringing up that statement is because, of course, notorious jackass and NBA broadcaster Paul Pierce was on ESPN's The Jump talking about, Riley's statement, and in fact said if the Heat are close to being a contender, then that means every team in the league is a contender. Something along those lines. I might be paraphrasing here. Pierce was both right and wrong. I don't want anybody to kind of jump at that statement because the reality is I have been, well, I am not necessarily as anti-player as a lot of my listeners or even other types that are in the media. But the reality is that I've never been a big fan of Paul Pierce and his shenanigans and his just overall style of play. I remember over a decade ago going to catch a game there long before I had jumped into the NBA media lifestyle and yelling overrated at the top of my lungs as the richer people all around me in the lower bowl levels looked astonished at my yelling at Paul Pierce, who went on to go torch us for 20-something points. Either way, I get his point. The Heat aren't quite clear there. He followed up his statement that the Heat aren't a legitimate contender in his eyes because they don't have a top five player. I get it. Right now, though, I would say that they're not necessarily a contender, but they're also a very good team that can win. And that's a very important distinction there. They have the depth. I keep going back to a statement that Myers Leonard told me about his regret about the season ending prematurely because he thought that this team had everything covered, from depth to shooting to defense to offense to passing to playmaking to coaching to front office management and everything else and everything in between, that this team was as qualified as any of making a long title run as any team that he's been on. And that's a team including last year where he was with the Portland Trailblazers and they advanced to the Western Conference Finals and have made the playoffs a number of times during Myers' career. So that's pretty surprising. And so that's why I feel like Pierce might be a little bit off there. Sometimes not very often, but you can get lucky. Maybe you can have a team with just a lot of great depth there. And while Jimmy Butler may not be a top 10 player, he's a top 15 player. And I think Bam Adebayo is close. And if that's the case there, you have two very, very good players surrounded by a lot of depth that makes this team a very, very qualified team to go on a deep run. Now, they have to get lucky. They certainly had to hope that they could knock off Milwaukee or Toronto or Philadelphia or any other teams in the Eastern Conference if they had been able to advance this season. But unfortunately, we'll never know what how that might have played out. But I was optimistic that they might have been able to knock off those teams, that they might have been able to find just enough. And we'll never know for certain. Maybe at some point, if the playoffs resume, we'll get a close approximation of what that might have been. But I had some faith in this team because they do have a lot of talent, because they do have a commitment to winning. And it was a good group, better than the sum of its parts, perhaps. And maybe that's why Pierce is wrong in this. So I like Riley's attitude, and I think he understands that maybe they're not necessarily a title contender right away, but they are close, and that's the reality. And I think Pierce is wrong in that maybe if you add Giannis Antetokounmpo to this team, they're immediately a contender. But if you add Giannis Antetokounmpo to the Sacramento Kings, I don't think that makes him a contender. So, I mean, even you look at his own Milwaukee Bucks, his current Milwaukee Bucks, and they have an all-star in Chris Middleton. They have some great role players. They have some great depth. They have a lot of the same things that Miami has. And so, yeah, sure, if you add a top five player, that propels you into contention, but it's not necessarily a guarantee. But what is a guarantee is what I'll be talking about next, which is, of course, the ESPN documentary that everybody's been watching, how difficult it is to win and what makes the Big Three era even more unique. I'll be talking about The Last Dance next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. I also want to talk to you about what, frankly, is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, and that's Built Bar. Look, I don't always like the products we endorse as a network, but when I tried a Built Bar for the first time last week, I was blown away. Some protein bars taste like chalk, and ones that taste decent aren't particularly good for you. But Built Bars taste like a candy bar and have the nutrients you're looking for, and they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. There's 16 flavors to choose from, so you're bound to find at least one you love. I recommend the banana chocolate cream myself, but everyone around the network says all of them are great. They're easy to chew, they taste awesome, and they're good for you. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order today. A great tasting protein bar that's good for you too. Butler's trying to stay busy during the NBA hiatus, and I'll talk to you about that in the next segment. But first, The Last Dance. Everybody's talking about it. There's so much review of this going on. It's the only real sporting event with the passing of the NFL draft a few weeks ago. So everybody's glued in on their TVs or watching it on Netflix or ESPN. They're talking about it. Everybody's got a podcast devoted to it. There's so much to break down there, and I think it just shows the incredible impact of Michael Jordan, the individual, the Chicago Bulls as a group, and how much they impacted the sport and fandom. My fandom is almost directly tied to Michael Jordan's ascension in the league. I've been talking about it during our recent shows on Locked On NBA, which you should totally check out, where me and my former Locked On Heat co-host Wes Goldberg have been breaking down the shows and offering our insight as to what we've been watching. But I was watching, you know, the Dream Team in 1992. That was the group with Jordan at the lead and Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing and Chris Mullin and everybody else in that group. That was the reason why I started following basketball. All these superstars I had heard of on the periphery and wasn't really following, and all of a sudden they were together in one group, and that was enough for me. And then from there, I just slowly watched more and more basketball, watched the Heat, of course, continue to develop as a team. But it's been a great series to watch and to kind of share with NBA Twitter in general and see everybody's take on these things. I actually experienced Jordan's growth and everything, so maybe my perspective was a little different. I know for some younger guys like Wes Goldberg, he didn't really watch Jordan in his prime. So it's been different for him to kind of just learn all these things new. I've also done some research and read some books on the Jordan era, but either way, one of the things that kind of stood out aside from just the Dream Team and everything else is that Michael shows a lot of, I wouldn't say humanity necessarily, although he has at times. He's also shown some weaknesses, and he's shown how difficult the grind is, something that we kind of tend to overlook. His life by the time it was kind of focusing on 92, 93, that final season of the Chicago Bulls' first three-peat. And if you recall Jordan's career arc, he had, you know, been drafted in 1984, spent 6 years of middling success, wasn't really able to get out of the playoffs, wasn't able to get past the first round on some occasions. And as good a talented scorer as he was, a lot of the view around the league from maybe your harsher journalists was that Jordan was just a scorer, not a guy who was capable of elevating everybody around the team. And so eventually he was able to get past the Detroit Pistons and win his first title against the Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, he went on from there to become much more of the ruthless version of Jordan that I think we all kind of associate. He was ravenous for another title. And so he won his second straight title against the Portland Trail Blazers in 91. And then from there, I'm sorry, 92. And then, of course, its third straight title against the Phoenix Suns in 1993. And by that point, he was clearly exhausted. He spoke at length about how difficult it is to be Michael Jordan and the constant focus and energy and attention and everybody kind of clawing at you from a media perspective, from a fan perspective. There is so much expected of Jordan at that point in his peak that it was getting to him. And, you know, the focus on his gambling, the focus on his off-court activities, on everything that he was about and interested in. And so it was a constant challenge for him. Not only that, but also to have to go up against some very quality opponents on the court. He had to go up against Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing and, of course, all the Eastern Conference just to get to the best teams in the West. And so it was a very difficult process for him. And while I don't want to spend so much time talking about Jordan, the reality is that it kind of shows the grind and how difficult it is and why what Miami was able to accomplish during the 4 years of the Big Three era, it really makes them stand out. You know, I recently talking about this with Wes Goldberg about the Warriors and their run, I understand that it's very difficult, but even then, they were able to inject some very new blood in Kevin Durant, who not only is a supremely talented player, but one of the best in the league. And so it gets a whole other boost. Something comparable would have been like if the third season of the Big Three, you know, maybe they had traded for a Chris Paul in 2013, or they had somehow acquired another top 10 player at the time. Maybe even a Carmelo Anthony, somebody along those lines, somebody who hadn't won but was hungry for that success. Miami didn't have that luxury. Of course, they had the Big Three, and they had to build around them, and they were able to add players like Ray Allen and Shane Battier and everybody else, but that wasn't enough. There were role players at that point. They weren't at the same level as a Kevin Durant coming to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and the 73-9 Golden State Warriors. And so I just found it very interesting how, you know, we always assume that if you're this very talent-laden team, that a run to the finals is almost an automatic thing. But in reality, it's very far from, and it takes its toll. And that's why I think it bears repeating that what the Big Three were able to accomplish to go to four straight finals, just amazing. For LeBron to do it, 8 straight finals, even more so. He is just a different player. Perhaps one of the reasons why I've said that, you know, LeBron might be a better player than Michael Jordan. Now, we don't know what would have happened in 94, 95 if Michael had been able to, you know, stay a part of the league, if he hadn't, you know, temporarily retired to go play baseball. It was clear he needed a break. You know, he did. He took it. He was kind of, his fires were restoked at that point. But the reality is that, you know, they were a team under the microscope, and it's very, very difficult. And for LeBron, he went through the same thing. He's going through the same thing. For him to leave Cleveland the first time in 2010 and still be able to carry this team along with Dwayne and Chris and everybody else in a Heat uniform to the finals 4 straight years, and then to leave Miami and face that criticism and going to Cleveland, although, of course, nationally, I think everybody respected the decision because it was him going, quote-unquote, home again. You know, for him to make 4 straight trips to the finals with those teams, very, very impressive. And with the Big Three as well, you know. And that's also why I think it was pretty obvious that in that fourth year, without that injection of talent or you know, a new, fresh attitude, that Miami's days, that the Big Three era days were numbered during that last season, that it was exhausting for not just LeBron, but for Dwayne and Chris and everything else. The constant media scrutiny at that time was just maybe it wasn't at the same level as Jordan, but it was pretty close. You know, there was a constant scrutiny on Twitter and all sorts of social media, something that Jordan didn't have to deal with. I can't imagine what it would have been like in 1992 for him to log on to Instagram and see people tell him, you know, all the terrible atrocities that people say online now to all other kinds of celebrities and superstars. But I just thought it was an interesting thing here as I continue to watch, you know, the Last Dance, and of course, I'm sure a lot of you are as well. The parallels to today's game and to the Heat, I think, are worth pointing out. And so I just wanted to spend a little time focusing on that. There's been a lot more to it, the way he treated Tony Kukoc in the Olympics, his ability to get, you know, guys like Dennis Rodman to focus and contribute. You know, it's been a very interesting process there. And, you know, let's keep in mind, he did take those 2 years off. He didn't make the finals when he came back as a player in 1995. And then, of course, they were able to win their next three-peat there. So who knows what would have happened if LeBron had stayed. Maybe they would have continued to find a way to win. Unfortunately, we'll never know. But what we do know is what Jimmy Butler thinks about his decision to join the Heat. I'll get into that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember, listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on the Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. I'll be honest with you, it's been a little quiet out there. I know a lot of people have a lot more important things than this podcast or basketball in general going on, and so I completely understand. But, you know, don't feel bashful or shy. Feel free to reach out either on iTunes by leaving a review, which I always read and I appreciate, because it lets me know exactly what needs to improve as far as the show is concerned. But if you have suggestions, or if you have things that you want to, you know, see recorded or talked about on this show, I'll be more than happy to do so if you shoot me an email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. That's always a good way of reaching out to me, or you can do so on Twitter as well. But I did want to get into something that's been kind of making the rounds a couple days ago. Jimmy Butler appeared on Sue Bird and her partner, Megan Rapinoe. They have a live streaming on IG Live called A Touch More. Sue and Megan have been talking to various other stars in the WNBA and, of course, in U.S. women's soccer. And just a good opportunity to kind of break the ice a little bit. They have drinks. They talk about a variety of different subjects. And the first male participant they've had on the show, Jimmy Butler. So that was a rather strange occurrence there. But Jimmy is, of course, an interesting character. And that was pretty evident during what was about a 30-minute segment of the show there. They played some music. They talked a lot. It was a fun, relaxed atmosphere. Jimmy with a glass of wine. Sue and Megan drinking some Moscow Mules. It's a little bit more relaxed environment than we normally see our athletes. And so it was kind of great to see that Jimmy was bored, not on the podcast, or rather on the live stream show, but rather just in general, because he says being on the West Coast, he gets up for team workouts at 5:30 in the morning there, because if they're 8:30 here and then he has nothing to do for the rest of the day, they're kind of stuck there. You can continue to work out. And it's not that he's complaining or ungrateful for his safety, but at the same time, you know, as a professional athlete, you get used to traveling all the time, to having so many demands on your time. That's no longer the case, and so he's been kind of bored out there. You know, his boys are there, he's got friends staying with him and staying healthy, and at least they're able to stay occupied. So interestingly enough, he went to his California home there and did not choose to stay in South Florida. Who knows if that'll change at some point. He also spoke about his friendship with Dwayne Wade and said that his time playing together with Dwayne was the best, that he's one of his best friends. He talked about how good it was to be able to unite with Dwayne for that one season in Chicago. Obviously they shared the common background of having played at Marquette University, but it was a different time there, and they never, their careers at Marquette never overlapped. But he was able to learn so much from Dwayne Wade, and he kind of spoke about how in Chicago, playing under Tom Thibodeau, he had been conditioned to hate Miami and hate the Heat and everything that affiliated with that team. And, you know, understandably so. They were in the middle of competing against the Heat in the Big Three era for a potential playoff spot and an opportunity to advance to the NBA Finals. But eventually, having played alongside Dwayne, he recognized how good a person Dwayne was and, you know, just really seem to get along with him. And if not for Dwayne, who knows? Jimmy probably would never have come to Miami. He also said about his tenure with the Heat that he was hella happy. And I believe him. Sue and Megan talked about it. They believe him too. He said it was a perfect situation for him. That as much as he likes his tenure in Chicago and Minnesota and Philadelphia, even as contentious as they were, something that I think totally appeals to Jimmy, he's just happy in Miami. He's been able to bond and establish relationships there, something he talked about. And it's a good fit for him. It's a great culture and one that he's just really been able to embrace and enjoy. And he's talked about Riley. He talked about Spo somewhat jokingly on a kind of segment there that they had during the podcast or streaming event. Sorry, I'm not quite sure what to call it sometimes. Sue Bird and Megan asked Jimmy to play a game called Wife Him Up, Netflix and Chill, or Ghost Him. If you know the game I'm referring to, it's a variation of one that's a lot more popular called FMK. You probably are familiar with it. Anyway, he was asked for three popular stars, Beyonce, Ariana Grande, and Taylor Swift. He made his decisions. And then the next time he was asked to wife him up, Netflix and Chill, or Ghost, Brett Brown, Eric Spoelstra, and Tom Thibodeau. Jimmy played along, wasn't too happy with it maybe, but a good guy, open to the opportunity there. He ghosted Brett Brown for obvious reasons there. Obviously a very contentious situation in Philadelphia. He decided Netflix and Chill with Tom Thibodeau, which a little surprising there considering what Thibodeau looks like. But also decided to wipe up Eric Spoelstra. He says he's married now. He's the one for him. It's a good fit. And kind of funny. Like, I know it's all a joke and everything else. And, of course, during these moments where we're starving for content, there's not much to really go on. But it was just kind of funny to see, one, Jimmy Butler putting on the spot. And then, two, express his appreciation for his team, his coach, his players, his the guys that share that locker room with. And so I just thought it would be fun to kind of point that out there, because if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's on Megan Rapinoe's Instagram feed. Again, there's about an hour-long episode there, but the segment with Jimmy is about 30 minutes, give or take, and you can fast-forward through some of it if you want to. But just check it out. It's fun. And you probably don't have much time to do much other things. There's unfortunately not a lot of basketball to watch, but stay tuned. I'll be recording some other shows about some of the highlights of the season next. And, of course, thank you so much to our sponsors, Built Bar, for providing sponsorship for the show. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. Of course, you can always email me at lockedonheat@gmail.com. I'm David Romel. Thank you, as always, for your support. Yeah! Back it up, D.